Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Curzon Film Podcast. This week we're looking at The King of the Jungle and The Queen of the Cinema as we talk about The Lion King and Varda by Agnes. I'm Jake Cunningham, and it's with great pride that within the circle of pods, I'm able to welcome the roaringly good Kelly Powell.
Hello.
The main event, Beth Webb.
Hiya. I wasn't expecting my name to come after that then. Thank you.
And just lying around with Sam Howlett.
Hello.
Hello, everyone.
Hi.
It's lovely to have you all here. So we've got a couple of films to talk about that are out at the cinema this week. We're going to start with Varda by Agnes. And it's lovely to have you back with us, Beth, because last year we had a string of lovely Agnes Varda episodes here. We had a Gleaning Truths episode, which was the name of the re-release box set and touring program of her films. And we did a nice episode with a few different critics coming in to talk about her, of which you were a part of as well.
Yes.
And so I'm wondering if you could just give us a quick synopsis about Varda by Agnes. It's just the new and final film by the great filmmaker.
Yes, sure. So sadly, we lost Agnes Varda in March of this year. This is a documentary. It's a lecture with the filmmaker herself, and it's spliced with footage of her body of work, behind-the-scenes footage, interviews that she conducts with collaborators from her body of work, just also very, very sweet little vignettes of her on a beach talking to little children, just these little pockets of interviews that she gives in her very artistic, creative way outside of the lecture.
And where I think it's important to kind of get people up to speed on her at this point, if we need to do a completely condensed biog for people that are going into this, because obviously this is going to be a film that a lot of people are going to want to see because they may have seen Faces Places and then want to see the new Agnes Varda film. But this film is very reliant on perhaps a knowledge or slight understanding of her previous films, because it's very much her addressing her own work. So is there any easy truncated way of kind of getting people into this?
No.
But maybe the best option is just to go and watch the film.
Think so. I really do think this is, if you are coming into Varda's work fresh and you haven't seen anything, or you've perhaps only seen one or two key pieces of work, this is her guiding you through it personally with her own anecdotes and overviews and what she was looking to achieve when she went in to approach these pieces of work. You're right, I think it does rely a little bit on her previous knowledge, but there's a wealth of knowledge out there already readily available. As you say, the box set's available through, is it available on Curzon On Demand?
Yep,
it's available on Curzon. Yep.
Perfect. Well, that's a start and a plug. And Faces Places, as you say, that's available on Netflix at the moment. So there's plenty of ways that you can go and familiarise yourself with her work if you so choose. But if not, this is a really, really good place to get stuck in.
Yeah. And there's a nice dynamic over here because Sam, you're a great sinner. And this is only one of a few Vardas you've seen compared to Beth, who's literally written the essay on for the box set.
I know, to my shame.
I want to get how, for both of you, and this I'm sure will be for a lot of our listeners, for a new viewer, how this stands up, and for a well-versed viewer, Let's start with Sam. So you've not seen much.
I've seen Cleo from 5 to 7, and that is it. I've actually seen that twice, so that counts as two.
Yeah, no, does that mean it's Cleo from 10 to 14?
Yes, sure. No, so I went in kind of cold with this. Like, I have an idea of who Agnes Varda is, and I could name you a few of her films, but I'm not that familiar with her as a filmmaker, in terms of her style and form. And I was trying to think of, I've got a half an hour in, and I was trying to think of which other filmmaker could get away with making a documentary about themselves. Like, imagine, like Scott by Ridley. Imagine watching that and having Ridley Scott talk to an audience about himself and his films and then having like clips from them.
I mean, having heard some interviews with later stage Ridley Scott, I'd be quite happy to watch that.
Joey, it's just a weird thing, and I think she's one of the very few people that can get away with it without it seeming in any way egotistical or in any way arrogant, because she's so delightful and watchable and humble. And
it's a huge credit to the film that you don't know the stuff,
yeah,
watch 2 hours of it and still enjoy it.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Yeah. So I enjoyed the stuff where she like looks back at Cleo from 5 to 7 and talks about how she made certain parts of that film and really dives into it. And then when she starts talking about something that I haven't seen, like Vagabond, I was a bit like, I don't know if I'm going to get anything from this section, but I really did when she talks to the actress in Vagabond, interviews her on the spot where they filmed it and all that kind of stuff. And she's really physically diving into her back catalogue.
I think it's important we talk about how she talks about Vagabond as well, because mm-hmm. she's giving insight into the use of shot and the use of location while sat on top of a moving tracking cart with a cardboard camera behind her. And she's talking to the camera as she's sort of tracking slowly in one direction herself and talking to the camera. So there's something quite playful in how she's doing that.
Yeah.
She gets quite creative, and you can tell she has some voice over how she's telling her story.
I think this is where the film is at its strongest, where she makes the point a couple of times that she's so interested about the blend of fiction and documentary and manipulating film, replaying stuff. So there's a bit where she says, on repeat. and where she's kind of messing and blending the lines between what we're watching now, this kind of super hyped up YouTube masterclass, and then actually shooting this stuff in a field with this tracking shot that then turns, ends on a tractor, and then that cuts into a tracking shot that begins with a tractor from one of her films. So it's not just that we're getting cutaway, like quickly narration and then whatever film she's talking about. She's really thinking about how can I blend my thoughts in the modern context with what was being made 40 years ago.
And she's a really skilled filmmaker. I think it should come as no surprise that this is her input. I mean, she's set the bar. She's been making films like since she was 26, 27, I think it is. She's got fans like Scorsese, who, you know, took references from Cleo from 5 to 7 in terms of editing and applied that directly to After Hours. She's absolutely one of a kind, which is why I think we're struggling to find a close comparison to who else would be able to pull something like this off.
Yeah. And so for you, Beth, a strong member of the fan club, who has seen the films, unlike Sam, how does this film inform on your knowledge and enjoyment of the works?
Well, the thing is with Varda is she's such a multifaceted artist. Like, she's not only a filmmaker, she's also a visual artist and a photographer. She was in her earlier years before she became a filmmaker. And I think there's something there for absolutely everybody. I have seen most of her films, but I had very little idea of how she worked as an installation artist and certainly as a photographer as well. But then there's also something that I really enjoyed, because she's a documentarian as well, listening to her talking with her subjects, because she would interview anybody. She'd interview like Catherine Deneuve, or she'd interview someone who gleans potatoes for a living with that same level of respect. And you can really hear her become really absorbed with the subject. She doesn't interrogate. She listens. She laughs at what they're saying. And you can see them reacting to her with such warmth. And, you know, she kind of emanates this magnetism, and you see them react to that, and that for me was really special to watch, because you don't really get to see that in her films necessarily. So I got a lot from it in that respect.
Yeah, I think the film takes a shift in maybe the second half as we get to the 21st century, and she's spending more time in the visual art realm, installations, galleries, And I think for me, that felt like such a generous act for her as a filmmaker and as an artist, but also to the curators and people that worked with her who are in the film and happy to talk about these works, because sometimes artwork like that can be really exclusive, and that there are things here that none of us could have ever experienced because we weren't living in Berlin in 2005 when this thing was happening. And obviously we're never going to be able to experience those, but having the artists show them big and talk you through their development of what this artwork was and how people experienced it, and actually filming in the setting. Like, some of these were great, like when she talks about building a shed out of the materials that were just being lost in the digital revolution, like loads of stocks of camera film. And rather than just get rid of it, cut the film out of Vagabond or whatever and turn that into an amazing shack. And that people can go and walk inside this shack and see film cells. And she just refers to this as another facet of cinema.
Yeah.
And that's so cool that that is as much cinema as the projected screen is.
Yeah.
And that's, for me, is something that's always so thrilling and exciting about her work when you track it through all of her careers, that she's so happy to embrace new stuff. And it's always in search of new ways of approaching cinema. And it always frustrates me when people like maybe like a Tarantino or someone like that will name their company with something that is inspired by the French New Wave. And Agnès Varda was really there at the start and was beginning the whole thing. And she's totally not this cine bro person. She's so happy to be embracing new digital technologies. And there's great sections of this where she's like, I love digital cameras. They're so small and I can take them everywhere. And that point, she entered a whole new phase of filmmaking.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
She's a curious filmmaker. I was very lucky to write a piece for Empire where I spoke to her, some of her key collaborators. And a word that kept coming up time and time again was how curious she is as a filmmaker, that it just starts with an idea and all she cares about is capturing that idea and seeing where that idea goes. She couldn't care less about, as you say, kind of making sure you have the right equipment. Like, if she could point and shoot a phone at something, that's what she would do. And that's really what carries her, and what will carry her legacy, I think, is that real level of curiosity and kindness as well. She was very kind.
Yeah, and as you said, Sam, there's maybe no one else that could pull this off.
No, exactly. She's one of a kind.
Yeah, David O. Russell would not be able to do that.
Oh, I'd love to see that, though. Russell by David.
No.
And he's just going insane on stage and getting really angry and like, who wants to fight?
Yeah. Was it keep it? Keep it. Keep that.
All right. So that's Varda by Agnès, which is going to be in cinemas and on home cinema as well. So people can check that out. Definitely one for fans of Faces Places,
absolutely,
which I think is on Netflix now as well. So do seek that one out if you didn't get the chance to catch up with it. But really, this is a unique beast. Do check this one out. It's really interesting. But we must move on, because there is a film out this week that is perhaps even bigger than Varda by Agnès.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
As much as I'm embarrassed to say that. Yes, and so we must move from one royalty to another. Sam, you have seen The Lion King.
I have seen The Lion King.
2019.
Correct.
As of you,
Kelly. That's what it says in the title card.
Yeah. What is this film about, in case people have forgotten?
Well, this is The Lion King. So this is perhaps the most beloved of the sort of 90s Disney Renaissance films. I think that's fair to say. This is the one that people are the most passionate about.
Yeah.
And
I think
this
Pinocchio
is the one.
Stand over here.
I think Disney is a very personal genre, and I think you should respect people's decisions to stray outside the Lion King.
Yeah,
correct.
Robin Hood, yes!
But of like the 90s ones.
Like, it doesn't matter. I'm a 90s kid, therefore Robin Hood.
I see, okay. that film follows Simba, who is the son of the king of the pride, Mufasa. and it's very loosely based on Hamlet, as we all know. And this film is a photorealistic updating of that original hand-drawn animated film.
Yes, it's not live action.
It's not live action because nothing that happens in this film is real, apart from maybe the floor. I don't even know. And yeah, this has a real crazy cast. It has Donald Glover. It has Beyonce. James Earl Jones is back. Chiwetel Ejiofor. Alfre Woodard, Eric Beyonce. Andre, Beyonce.
Oh, who's the Brit?
Seth Rogen, John Oliver.
Yeah.
And Eric Andre.
And Eric Andre, yeah. Wild cast. And, well, I think I should hand it for Kelly now, who I think is the biggest Lion King stan in the room.
Yeah. Yeah, I love the Lion King, the original. It's my favourite.
Your favourite film?
My favourite Disney, I think.
Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's contained to Disney. Yeah, I, you know what? This film was fine. We went to a multimedia screening of it and there were loads of kids about and they were having the best time, having their face painted and singing along to the songs, and they were just really cute and they enjoyed it. And you know, that's what it's for.
Yeah.
And I'm happy with that. I don't mind it.
Yeah. What were the feelings ahead of this? Because I actually really liked it's Jon Favreau who directed this, who did the Iron Man's and Chef and the Chef Show and anything Chef, and I love Chef.
Chef is great.
And
Chef sucks.
Have you watched the Chef Show?
No.
Oh, you should. It's really good.
How weird is it that Jon Favreau is now Disney's like go-to director?
Yeah.
When he used to be the guy from Swingers, and then he was Monica's boyfriend in Friends for a bit, and now he's like directed 5 major budget Disney films.
Well, and including all the Iron Man films that he's starred in. He is like a box office bank.
Yeah, it's weird.
He really is. I'm still not over Guy Ritchie's Aladdin, so.
Well, this film, like, I was intrigued about because I did like his Jungle Book a lot. I was not expecting to, and I had a really good time. And I thought it looked stunning. But, like, this is a whole different thing, isn't it?
Yeah, this is, I think, everyone had a similar expectation for this film that people were perhaps the most pessimistic about this one of all the Disney, on sort of the Disney remake movement. I think because there is no real updating of the story here. There's not much change. It is literally just the 94 film, but it looks real. And I think people were very cynical about that and very skeptical. And, you know, as I say, I think, What based on what I've seen online and things like that, is that Lion King has the most passionate fan base of any of the kind of big Disney animated films of the past 30 years or so. So this is kind of very sacred ground for a lot of people. And, you know, I think personally I had a good time with this. The 94 Lion King is a good film, and therefore this is a good film because it is the same film. But I think as soon as you see that sunset rising over the horizon and you hear that opening track and you see the lion cub and Rafiki holds him up, you do kind of forget about your cynicism for a while. And I did kind of get into it, and that opening is incredible in both versions. And I think it does the major Lion King moments really well. It does the opening really well. It does I Just Can't Wait to Be King really well. The death of Mufasa is done really well.
Yeah, it hits
Spoiler.
All the major...
Mufasa dies? What?
It hits all the major points, right? It's still rousing, you know, the music still swirls up in you, and like you, then it's kind of like, I remember, it comes back to you, and you have the same feelings. So it does... And the major arc is obviously the same, and you go through the same sort of emotions, although I didn't cry when Mufasa died this time around, which is saying quite a lot, I think.
Speaking of updating the songs, is there anything comparable to the quality of Josh Groban's contribution to Beauty and the Beast?
Nothing ever has been or ever will be.
Yeah. What is it called? Evermore?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was when we worked at the cinema and Beauty and the Beast was playing, credits would roll. Go in, clean the screen. I hadn't seen the film, but boy, did I love Josh Groban's track on the credits.
I think the original songs in this kind of fall flat for me. It doesn't. They don't really stand out. I think Beyonce has a little bit in the middle when
she sings Spirit.
Yeah.
Her new song.
Yeah. So that that was a bit. That kind of fell flat for me.
Okay. Yeah, I'm curious to ask. Like, so obviously that. there are huge differences here. The plot is very much the same.
Yes.
But, like, what specifically is gained from this new technology and what do we lose from it?
Right. So I think what's gained is the story is kind of... They have to change the story to fit what it looks like. So, for example, what I think they did really well was the updated version of I Just Can't Wait to Be King. They, like, set it in the... Obviously, because they can't do... elephants on top of giraffes.
Like they'd just be dead animals. Yeah.
So I think that just watching a massacre. So I think that they adapted the story well for that, for those elements. But there is something that is lost with the photorealism, in the sense that, like, oh, they look really cute and they're done really well, but it's kind of, I don't know. As I said, I didn't really cry when Mufasa died, and I think that's because it was too real in a weird way.
I think maybe the difference is Jungle Book, the original, is slightly less expressionistic than The Lion King is.
And maybe that very expressive. That, like, they've got like big eyes that emote a lot. Like, Scar's face in the animation original is crazy. Yeah. Like, it's going all over the place. Here, it's just a lion's face.
Yeah, that was the biggest disappointment for me, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I actually got the VHS of Timon and Pumbaa Around the World. Don't know if anyone remembers that. Before I saw The Lion King.
Oh, wow.
So I loved Timon and Pumbaa.
Yeah.
Before I loved anything else. How are they?
They are the best part
so
of this
good.
Film.
Oh, that's they're good. They're so good, yeah.
They're done really well.
They're the most... They
Seth
feel
Rogen
like the most...
and Billy Eichner.
Yes. Yeah. Billy on the Street.
Billy on the Street,
So good. It feels like the most updated
part
of the film. Like the most
I don't know how...
Part.
It felt like they had the most new dialogue and, yeah, I really enjoyed every moment there on screen, actually, a lot more than some of the other parts.
Yeah, definitely.
I think this film does look incredible, and I know it is kind of damning with faint praise when you say that about films sometimes, but you do, every now and then I did look at Infinite. There's a moment where it's a close-up of Rafiki, who is the baboon. It's a close-up of his face, and like a firefly flies past him. I did stop to think, oh, that does look really good, actually. Like, that looks like a real baboon's face with like this, the way they had the light fly past it does look pretty spectacular.
Okay, and in the all-time Disney live-action remakes, where does this rank?
Well, Aladdin was such a surprise that I actually enjoyed it, so I don't know how I compare this to Aladdin. I don't know if it's as good as The Jungle Book.
No,
I do
think
like
the Jungle Book
a lot.
Works better in this sense, but because there are major things in this film that don't work. For example, Scar's sort of version in this film, for me, it lacks a lot of the original tone of Scar, in his campiness, in his cleverness, he was really funny as well in the original film in his own way, you know, the way he plays off the hyenas and Zazu, that's lost very much so in this remake, unfortunately, because Jeremy Irons is so great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. But judging from what you said, Sam, it's definitely one to try and see as big as possible.
I think
because,
so.
Like, if that the big is those visuals.
Yeah, I think for pure spectacle, I think that's why you should see this film.
Yeah.
And if you have kids, take kids because they'll really enjoy
it. I love it. Yeah.
Definitely one for fans of that particular Jon Favreau genre work.
Absolutely.
More so than maybe the original Lion King.
Yeah, quite possibly.
All right, so that's what's on at the cinema this week. We got a few things up on demand as well. Sam, what's happening on Curzon Home Cinema?
You can catch up on Only You, which we talked about last week, and we spoke to Hay Whitliffe, the writer-director, and Josh O'Connor and Laya Costa. You can watch that on Curzon Home Cinema, along with Fighting With My Family, Stephen Merchant's wrestling film. With
really
Florence
like
Pugh.
That film and wish more people watched it.
Yeah. We've also got Diamantino.
Beth, we look to you.
What a film. What a film. To be seen, to be believed, but just a little tidbit. Giant Pekingese puppies on a football pitch surrounded by like pink marshmallow glittery clouds.
Yes.
As our titular character does his business on the football pitch.
And also wrapped into a kind of Portuguese nationalist political government conspiracy theory with genetic experiments and clones of a Cristiano Ronaldo type player.
Yes. Also, I think the best take on Brexit I've seen on screen yet.
Yeah.
Like, Iannucci wishes he made this film, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's just a natural pairing to The Jungle Book. And yeah, we've also got the Agnes Varda collection released last year. That's all available on the Home Cinema website. And if you do want to, you can buy the Blu-ray or DVD box set of that. And if you search online for the Gleaning Truths box set, I believe it was, there you'll be able to find Beth's essay as well. So do check that out. I'll put a link in the description as well if you do want to read it. And that's really about it for this week. If you've got any thoughts on The Lion King or Varda by Agnes, you can tweet us at Curzon Cinemas, and we'd love to hear your thoughts on those films. And you can all find us there as well. I'm there at Jake H. Cunningham. Kelly, you're on Twitter as?
KS_Powell.
Sammy?
Howlett_1.
Every week, you still don't know.
I don't use Twitter that much, so I don't know what I'm called.
Beth, you're there as well.
Yes, Beth K. Webb.
Lovely. Right, if it's your first time listening to the show, please subscribe. You can do that on iTunes, Acast, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. And when you're there, if you could leave us a review or a comment, that would be absolutely wonderful as well. Thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.